e ngā iwi, e ngā reo, e rau rangatira. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Greetings and welcome to you all and to our two guest speakers, Christina Leaf and Micaiah Leach. This is our first lecture in our series on the courage to act, and it follows a series of lectures earlier this year on human flourishing. And we look forward to hearing where they've got to say. But yeah, I'm delighted today to have Micaiah and Christina speak to us about the topic of the courage to act. And I think this is an interesting topic. It's, to me, it's got two aspects. It's about our personal courage, but it's also about how we see courage in other people and how we recognise other people's courage. The way we'll organise the session is we'll have the two speakers and then I will ask for questions. And there's information about our two speakers on the notes in front of you, so I won't spend a lot of time introducing them. Thank you.
Tēnā tātou kua huihui mai I tēnei o tātou whare. Me mihi kātika, kia koe Jan I te tuatahi nau, I whakapā mai ki au, te pātai atu, ina hia hia I tāna mai ki te kōrero, me taku mīharo I whiriwhiri au. So, first of all, welcome everyone. I just want to do, first and foremost, a big thanks to the St. Andrew's Trust for Study of Religion and Society for asking me to come and give a presentation today on this awesome topic about courage to act. So I just want to say thank you for this awesome opportunity to share with you all a bit about my life and what has helped me to build my courage to act in all aspects of my life. So yeah, thank you. And thank you, Jan. I used to work with Jan actually at Te Tairawhiri Te Reo Māori, so it's really good to see a familiar face here today. First and foremost, ko waio, who am I? My name is Micaiah Leach, as you can see in the bio, and I am 24 years old. I was born in the early 90s, and I was born and bred on the east coast, so around Gisborne. I was brought up in Whangara and Tolaga Bay. So ko Pukeha Pupo te maunga, ko Waio Moko te awa, ko Ngāti Kunohi te iwi, ko Ngāti Riwai te hapū, ko Paikia te tangata, ko Te Reanini te waka, ko Micaiah Leach ahau. So what I have just said, I've just introduced myself. Pukeha Pupo is my mountain, Waio Moko is my river, Ngāti Kunohi is my tribe, and Ngāti Riwai is my sub-tribe. And my name is Micaiah. So if you can see to this picture there, the beautiful sunny, let's just imagine that that is Wellington on a beautiful day. So that is Whangara. I'm not sure if anyone's actually visited Whangara before. Yay, awesome, that's good to see. So has everyone seen the movie The Whale Rider? Yes, so that's where I come from, where The Whale Rider was born. And so we are actually referred to as Te Kaieke Tohora, which is, translates to the whale riders. So we're sometimes classified as the whale riders or the whalers or things like that. The top picture here to my left side are my grandparents, so Lena and Hemi Leach, and that is the marae you may recognise from the movie Whangara Marae. So Whitireia and Waho Te Rangi are the two whare that stand here at Whangara. And that's where I grew up. So I grew up in paradise, that's what I like to tell everyone. So you guys have heard who I am, and a big part of who I am is, like, we all love our families. So this is my beautiful family here on the beach, and we recently had a whānau reunion. So my extended family is about 300 plus people. So we're actually quite small compared to some of my aunties and uncles who have 10 plus children. So we're considered one of the smaller families of the Leach family. So if you can see my grandparents here, my mum, my mother's brother, and my first cousins and my uncle's wife. So that's my beautiful family who I love to pieces, and they actually play a key role in building my courage to act. So that's why I thought I would acknowledge them here today. Okay, so because I like to talk, I've noted down some key points that to keep me on track. So some key points I want to cover today is definitions of courage, whānau, which you guys have seen my beautiful whānau, identity. Some of you may not know what kapa haka is, so I want to give a bit of a spiel about kapa haka, core values that kapa haka has taught me, Also cultural connection, kapahaka abroad. So some of you may not know that kapahaka can actually take you overseas. So I've got a few little experiences that I would like to share with you guys also. And last but not least is my reality, what I actually do on a day-to-day basis, because some people think that I just perform kapahaka and that's my reality. But in actual fact, I'm a policy analyst. So I just wanted to highlight some things about my reality outside of kapahaka. So let's get into it. The Oxford Dictionary defines courage as the ability to do something that frightens one, and bravery. So I look at this statement, and first I try and find who my key examples are of who this definition of courage. So everyone has a role model that they look up to who can define what courage looks like in the flesh. So my definition of courage today and my role model of a courageous person is my mum. So my mother is a very courageous woman. She brought my sister and I up as a solo parent, and that's a courageous move, making that conscious decision to bring up two children by yourself, with the help of my grandparents, of course, while she was at university. And also last year, she showed another side of courage when she was diagnosed with breast cancer last year. So this year she is healthy, which we are very grateful for, but we've gone through a lot of ups and downs, and she has shown me what true courage looks like. So she's always been solution focused, always finding the solution whenever there is a problem, and I think that is an excellent example to follow. So that's my upbringing, has always been about, if I went, "Mom, this is wrong," she said, "Well, how do you fix it?" That's always been her advice. How do you fix it? What can we do to fix the problem? Never actually focusing on the problem itself, was just always finding solutions. So that's something that has helped me to build up my courage to get through life. Another thing is education. So my mother made the conscious decision to put my sister and I through total immersion education. So we were put through Kohanga Reo, which is the early childhood total immersion education system. We were also put through Kura Kaupapa Māori up the coast, and also Wharekura. Now that decision was made in a time when people were really against what te reo could do for you and what tikanga and what te ao Māori could actually do. She fought even our own family around making that conscious decision, because it's the fear of the unknown. You don't know what could have happened to us. I think there was this illusion that we won't be able to speak English and how would we survive. But she made the conscious decision and she fought all odds, and look where we are today. So I would like to say I'm a graduate of Kohanga Kura Kaupapa and Wharekura, which is total immersion schooling. However, there was also a time when I reached NCEA, we found that, okay, so the kura doesn't quite offer all the options for the subjects that I would like to take. So we transitioned over into a mainstream education system. Now, just before I even started, the school system thought that I couldn't go into top classes because I'd never been through a mainstream education system. So again, my mother fought and said she has topped her years. Every year since she was 5, she can do anything. So I was put into mainstream, first time ever. So I had to learn in my first term of high school everything about basic grammar. And I done that. It was just, that was the type of upbringing we had. You just, there's the problem, find the solution and get through it. I also had extra tutoring because we identified that I needed to pretty much learned 2 years in 10 weeks, which I did. So that's just the type of example that my mother is. She would not stop until her children had everything that they deserve. So that was me in an education kind of system. So I went through total immersion, hit about 15. So for 15 years of my education, I had been in total immersion, switched over to mainstream from 15 to 17, and still managed to get university entrance, have a degree, graduate. So it's just proof in the pudding that whatever you set your mind to, you can achieve. Now, another core area that my mum has always honed into us was about Tūranga Waiwai. So Tūranga Waiwai is your place of belonging, where you come from. So that's also been a very strong feature, and that leads into my next few slides. So just keep that in mind, Tūranga Waiwai. Okay, so the next slide that I have up here is, so kapa haka, because I know that was in my bio about how kapa haka has helped influence me, has built my courage to act. And that is very true. So being brought up in a very Māori environment in Gisborne, I was under actually this illusion before I left Gisborne that everyone spoke Māori, everyone engaged in te ao Māori. And when I moved to Wellington, that reality kind of come screaming down, and actually I found out that actually I'm a minority in this whole system. So kapa haka has been an excellent platform for me to express how I feel, what I'm feeling, and current issues and things like that. So kapa haka, if we break it down, the word kapa means to stand in a row or rank. Also, kapa is another word for group, and haka is the dance. As we see the All Blacks do the haka, we've seen it. And if you break down the word haka, it's ha is breath and ka is to ignite. So it's to ignite the breath of life. Ka pai? So kapa haka, there's Māori performing arts, that's a definition for kapa haka as well, which that's what we do. So a kai haka, which is what I am, is a performer. So I'm a performer in a kapa haka group, which means a kai haka. It's a Māori dance, that's what some people refer to it as, which is a good definition. Kapa haka has a lot of expression. It also has a lot of singing, chanting, and dancing. Also, there's other things like competitions that your kapa haka group can strive towards. So in my area, we have regional competitions. I actually think we have the longest running regional senior kapa haka competition. It's been running for 60 plus years. It's been running longer than the actual national competition, Te Matatini. So Te Matatini was held in the Hawke's Bay this year, and it was hosted by Ngāti Kahunganu. And our group was really fortunate enough to be the champions this year. So, and that's just something that we're really proud of. And that also, I'm going to go through some examples on how we kind of got there to become champions. Well, I think the formula which helped us become the champions of the world. We only have a kapa haka competition here in New Zealand. So we like to call ourselves the world champs. But yeah, it's an awesome competition. And I will show a small clip of, if I have enough time, of our performance and one of our items. Okay, so kapa haka is a way for me to identify who I am. Te ao Māori, as I covered earlier, is something that we talk about heavily in kapa haka. So we have wānanga, which are like weekend sessions where we practice, we talk, we go over the history, we talk in the language in te reo Māori, and we also practice tikanga Māori, which are practices, and it's a way of life. And that's what we do at kapa haka wānanga. So it's a way of revitalising a culture. It's a way of revitalising the language. And that's something that we practice, and that's also what has built my courage for who I am today, because I know who I am, where I come from, and kapa haka has helped me consolidate every single thing that I have learnt in my life. Kapa haka has always been there. So these are just some core values that I have learnt and picked up and what I abide by in my everyday life, and it's through kapa haka that I have actually push the limits as to how these core values fit into my life. So commitment. Typical campaign, if we're training for nationals, is 6 months. 6 months weekend practices outside of your job. We don't practice during the week. It's a weekend commitment. So we could do 10 weekends. So because our group comes from the East Coast, that means I have to travel to Gisborne 10 weekends within 6 months. So kapa haka has taught me that commitment is key. So I made the conscious decision to join the group and be a part of it. So that's my commitment. And we don't get paid to do this, so it comes out of all the money, my own money. Secondly, positive attitude. You're tired on a Friday, you've worked all week, you get there and you have to be absolutely positive, because if you venture down that negative attitude, you won't get very far in a kapa haka group, because it also works a lot on energy, what you bring and what you provide. So positive attitude and your attitude towards things is very important. Respect. You have to be respected as well as respect others. So that also ventures into discipline. We were disciplined to train yourself to do intense, it's for half an hour on a stage. So you're very disciplined. You have to listen. You have to respect people in order to get far, get in a team. It's the daily values that we all live by. Hard work, that's probably one of the hardest things, is hard work. It is a lot of hard work. You're competing with multiple people to make the 40. There's a top 40 that you have to make in order to get to a competition. So it's constantly hard work. What is your point of difference from all the other women, males in that group? What puts you first? So it's a lot of hard work. Excellence. We always strive for excellence in our group, no matter what. Even if it's just a performance down at the marae, we want to give the best performance ever. And that's just a way of thinking. Determination and perseverance. I am very determined to make every single team every time. I will do anything it takes to make the team. Identity. That's a classic. Te ao Māori, it's a Māori performing art, so our identity through kapahaka shines. And it's something that I think a lot more people are kind of buying into now. They prefer to watch. They love kapahaka, they love the haka. So it's something that it's identified as Māori. When you say, I'm Māori, people automatically go, haka. So you're like, awesome. Belief, you've got to believe in yourself first and foremost. Believe in yourself that you can do it. And that's something that's really hard, especially when you're told, oh, you need to fix your hands, or your singing's not at this, we need it here. So you have to always believe in yourself. One thing that I think underpins everything is you have to be passionate. In order to do kapaka, you have to be passionate about it. If you aren't, you won't make it very far. So you have to be very passionate about kapahaka in order to make it. Got some other Māori values, so aroha, and that's just to love everyone. Manaakitanga is to care for others. It's a group environment. You have to care for your peers in the group. You can't make it being selfish. Another one is whakapono, and that's just also belief. And teamwork. Some people like to work individually, but it's a whole different dynamic when you have to balance out 40 personalities on a stage, not including all of their family members, their children, their husbands, wives, it's a whole collective. So teamwork is key when it comes to being in a successful kapaka group. And you have to be willing to give up a bit in order to gain some. If you look at the top picture there, I'm the smallest one on the left side. So that was in 1995. That was the first kapahaka competition that Te Kapahaka o Whangara, my tawhiti, had competed in since the 70s. So there was a huge cultural revitalisation in Whangara, where we had one of our kuia who, she had actually made all these pupu, had all these uniforms, and said to one of our leader, Derek Lardelli, here's the uniforms, now go start the group. And that was 25 years ago. Next year will be our 25th anniversary. It was a cultural revitalisation, intergenerational transmission. Now I like to call myself a life member. I've been there since I was two. So that was another conscious decision that our family made to commit to this group. Language revitalisation. A lot of the members in here couldn't even speak Te Reo Māori. They had heard of it, but this was a way for them to become speakers, to hear the language fluently. And that has progressed on to now where we have a bilingual practices, where it's both in Te Reo and English. Also, history revitalisation. There was a time when people didn't even know where they came from, who they were. So this was also another way of revitalising the history of whangara. And we sing about it, we chant about it still to this day, and that's a form of revitalisation that has kept our history, our language alive in our area. And it has also bred the new generation of Māori speakers like myself, because there's myself, my sister, and my other cousins, her and her brother, who also speak Te Reo Māori, and we've been brought up through this, and now we have an abundance of children at our practices now who will become the next generation of performers as well as Māori language speakers and people who know about who they are, and they will keep this tradition, history and language alive. Like how I said earlier, kapahaka is something that you can take to the world nowadays. I've travelled to American Samoa, Taiwan, Shanghai, and there will be also other trips coming up soon. So when you win a matatini, you become a New Zealand cultural ambassador for the country, and you get sent away on these trips. And so I like to talk about kapahaka being taken abroad because a lot of people think that it can't take you anywhere. I know of millions of people who, not millions, but multiple people who overseas right now doing kapahaka. Who would have thought that kapahaka could take you everywhere? It can. So it's also given me the courage to show everyone what my culture is, what it means to be Māori, sharing the language internationally and both nationally. So, yeah, I just wanted to show a few pictures of me and my family overseas doing kapahaka. So this is my final point. A lot of people think that I do kapahaka as a occupation and that I'm a kaihaka full-time. As I said earlier, it's pretty much a voluntary activity. It's something that I'm passionate about. So my reality is that I'm a policy analyst at Te Tautawhiti Te Reo Māori, so that's the Māori Language Commission. And my main driver is to make a difference in the public sector. So I want to use policy in the public sector to get people to, one, actively use Te Reo Māori in the public sector a lot more, to also support it, because I believe in the value of Te Reo Māori. So I think that's a courageous thing to do, is trying to create a shift in a system that does not necessarily, I wouldn't say doesn't support, but it doesn't have the mechanisms in place in order to use Te Reo Māori actively. If we were to live in a Te Reo Māori world, could we actually do that? So that's where like my thinking is, and that's what I love. And I love to gauge in what people's attitudes are towards the language. Is it positive? Is it negative? Why is it negative? How can I shift you over to the positive where I'm sitting? And because I believe in the value that Te Reo Māori has in Te Ao Māori. So that's something I like to research, and that's a part of my job. My everyday is looking at cultural revitalisation, language revitalisation. So kapahaka is the platform for me to express myself in terms of what I think key issues are and key solutions are for revitalising the language and keeping it alive. So a key question that I ask myself every day is, what did I do for Te Reo Māori today? And my answer is always, I speak Te Reo Māori, I will help others to learn Te Reo Māori, and I will keep the language alive for as long as I live. So that's my commitment that I will make. And last but not least, in order to build your courage tack, you have to do what makes you happy. And that's the best advice I could give you. So thank you. Sorry, this is a whakawātea, so it's an exit. This was our performance from Te Matatini this year. And if you have seen the movie Moana, it's a bit of a theme song. You might hear a bit of a catchy phrase. So I hope you enjoy. It's about a 3-minute clip.
To Christina Leaf, and Christina's going to give, I think, quite a different sort of a presentation, but it's going to be equally fascinating.
Be my friend, come on. Sorry, it's just moving slowly. 3 seconds, 2 seconds. Cool, that's working now. Okay, we have action now. I'm really bad at using whatever those things are called. whānau. We're finally there.
Oh my God, there's actually a stand. I was sitting down there and I was thinking, I can't use that because I'm vertically challenged. I'm not going to be able to reach the mic, but I can. Awesome. Kia ora. Kia ora, thank you for that kōrero. It was amazing. And at the end, makes me want to sign up for kapaka. Yes, yes. Awesome. Thank you so much, Jen, for letting both Mikai and us I come and kōrero this afternoon. And thank you to St. Andrew's Trust for letting us be here. Hi, ko wai au, I te taho tōku papa, e huri ahau no te rarawa, ko Ngāti Manua te hapū, ko Pāngaru te maunga, ko wai au te awa, ko Hokianga te moana, ko Ngāti Manua rawa, ko Waipuna Oku Marae, ko te karaka te hau kāinga, I te taho tōku māma, he huri ahau no Kuki Airani, no te Mautereo Aitutaki, ko Tautu te papa kāinga, ko Christina Leaf tōku ingoa. Just acknowledging where I'm from the centre of the multiverse, up in Tai Tokero in the far north, it's called Hokianga, and that's where I'm from on my father's side. And on my mother's side, I hail from the Cook Islands, from, again, the best island there, it's called Aitutaki. But I was actually born and raised in East Auckland, in Glen Innes, GI Till I Die, my favourite place, and I got so many learnings being brought up in a community that from the outside was highly stigmatised as being a low socioeconomic area, as a don't go near there because there's too many brown kids and they don't know anything. So that was actually a personality strength, resilience building, that's the one. So that's where I'm from GI. And I got this picture up because I didn't have any pictures of Tai Tokero in my online thing, which is crazy. But this is a beautiful picture of a place down south where I went to, and it was on the way to this beautiful body of water which is used to replenish oneself and to reset. So I just kind of thought I'd scab that, thought it was cool. In terms of courage to act, again, I do tautoko what you're saying, like whānau is such an important part of my life as well. And in particular, this is my sister, her name's Karen, and I really look to her for inspiration because she's one of those just badass wahine, I don't know if I could say that, those really amazing people that always defy the odds. So again, being brought up in an area where they say that you can't quite amount to much, or she's a young mum as well, she's 19, and people are like, oh, you're having a baby? Like, what are you going to do with uni? So she got a scholarship, and she it paid for her uni studies. And everybody have just been defying her, and each time she's been like, nah, catch you up. I'm going to continue to succeed and do what I need to do to make things happen. Oh, I'm that one there. I'm on the left-hand side. Oh, my God. Actually, my whānau were like, who's that girl? I was like, it's me? Like, come on. I know I've got eyebrows on this one, but it's still me. So, yeah, she's on the right-hand side, my younger sister, Karen. And another part that I do seek inspiration from and take from her courage is that when she was younger, we had a bit of rarus with a breakdown in family relationships, and when she was 13, she was uplifted from Auckland to come and live with me down here in Wellington. So that's a massive change if you're going from Auckland, which is like this whole other universe, right, coming down to Wellington and having to adapt to a new school and a whole new environment, and she just took it like a champ, really, and has flourished ever since. One of my other favourite people in the world is my nephew, who's her son. His name's Manawa. He's 4 months old now, and he's like the biggest thing ever. But he's one of my favourite things in the world, and he's a very big driver for me and all the mahi that I do in my existence, really. It's one of my values. This is my biggest thing that drives everything. My whole existence is kaitiakitanga, and it's guardianship. And for me, this is so important because when I've heard it been referenced, it's, you can't even see it, it says kaitiakitanga, but it's been used to talk about looking after the environment, and it's been solely used in that realm to be like, I'm kaitiaki, I'm a guardian of this earth, I need to look after the environment. But I'm like, well, yep, I'm that, in addition to being a guardian of my culture, a guardian of my family, I'm a guardian of myself and my peers as well, so I really hold this quite dear to me, and that's, again, one of my drivers. Yeah. Yep. So I'm just going to go back to my upbringing. So I was brought up in East Auckland in GI, and we were culturally disconnected. So my dad, my grandfather was in the war, and he was a part of the Māori battalion. And when he came back to Aotearoa after being in the war, he was moved down to Auckland to GI. So they said like an army barracks for some time. So we were brought up in East Auckland for quite some time. But at that moment, you could not be Māori. So that there was a huge transformation in assimilating, and that involved beating at school. You couldn't speak the reo, so you were hit in your school if you tried to speak te reo Māori. My dad and his other seven siblings would get beaten if they too tried to speak the reo or be Māori. They had to conform, and so that's had intergenerational impacts on all of us, because my dad is so traumatised he won't talk about it nowadays. So we were never brought up within te ao Māori, in the Māori world. We were still taught some of the values, which we knew, like, never sit on the table and all that stuff, but I just thought it was a thing that everybody did. So similarly on my Cook Island side, my mum's side, when my nana came here from Aitutaki when she was 14, she got sent by herself to work. She got sent over, knew no one. I don't know how she hustled to survive, but she did. And she was told, you must marry a rich white man. That was the thinking. Leave your Cook Islandness behind, you have to be in New Zealand now. And so that was the mindset about survival back in those days. So my mother wasn't brought up in it, and she disowned it. So it wasn't until I was in my last year of primary that I actually found out that I was Cook Island. I knew that when I go to my nana's house, and she could speak Cook Island, she can speak it. She never spoke it to her kids or anything. We ate banana poke, we ate minus, we ate Cook Island food. But I thought that she was Cook Island and I wasn't. And because my mum would be like, I'm not Cook Island. Like, it's so weird. It sounds weird. I know. But one of my best friends actually turned to me and said, you're Cook Island. And I was like, no, I'm not. But her mum was best friends with my mum's first cousin and told her. And so she told me that I was. And I was like, no, I'm not. And I was protesting against being Cook Island. And it wasn't until I actually confronted my mum and said, Aki said I'm Cook Island. Am I Cook Island? And she actually admitted that I was Cook Island. It was a biggest breakthrough in my life, because I'd been denied this part of my identity for such a long time. Well, seems like a long time when you're a little kid. But I dived right into it. So I had Cook Island friends, because I went to a school with mainly brown people, and I was like, teach me Cook Island words. Teach me the Cook Island National Anthem. Teach me all the things that I should know. And so it was a combination of self-taught, being taught by peers, and being taught by extended family members that I befriended, i.e. they accepted me to come and help me. So that was a really transformational period. And it wasn't until I left Auckland, being a rebellious teenager, to come and study down in Wellington at Victoria University, that I wandered into a Māori business lecture, and I learnt about the Treaty of Waitangi for the first time. And then I learnt about the injustices that we had faced, and I was so provoked that I had to learn more about Kōwaiō, who actually am I. And around that same time, my sister came to live with me. So I thought, we need to sort this out. The generation above us knew nothing about their culture, but we need to make a change now. So we went and we did night courses out in Porirua, and we lived in the city, trying to learn te reo. And the first one was like, what's your pepeha? What I said right at the beginning. I was like, I don't even know what a maunga is. What does that even mean? So I had to go on that journey with my whānau to be like, what is our mountain up north? And what does like a marae mean? Like, I haven't even been to my marae. All these things, it was a really beautiful journey for us both. And that, I started to feel so fulfilled inside. And I thought, yep, this is who I am. I could stand up tall and actually say, I am Christina Leaf, no te rarawa me kuki ai rani aho, this is where I'm from. When I came down to Wellington, I was studying Māori business. That was like the light that came down, and I was like, ta-da, I've got to go into the Māori business realm. And at that time I was working in finance. If you're in finance, you're doing an amazing job, because I could not survive. I was there for actually about 5.5 years. I was lucky enough to also get a scholarship, which came with employment, and I was set up in New Zealand Post House for quite some time, and that was awesome for my CV, but it wasn't really fulfilling my soul, and I just reconnected with my culture, and I wanted to serve my people in some way. So I don't know if you know this, but New Zealand Post kind of likes to do restructures every now and again. So I was restructured out of a role, and I was offered another role, and I did not want it. So I thought, I'm an entrepreneur. I just did this 3-month entrepreneur course. I can go and do that and be the entrepreneur thing. And so I left the job, was aimlessly wandering around, trying to figure out who I was, and going to events, meeting up with cool people, doing some cool stuff. And I love organising events. So my cousin was like, come and organise this event, Te Tato Ponamu, and it's going to look at Māori representation now and in the future. And I was like, oh my God, yes, heart out, let's go. And so we went and we're organising it, and it was amazing. We had like live illustrators there. They were drawing pictures of all the speakers and some of their key messages, so that blew people's minds. And then at the end of it, we were getting feedback from people. So we had a reflection corner, and it was an opportunity for them that if they felt the need to share a thought that popped into their head during one of the speakers' kōrero, just to jot it down on a piece of on a post-it note. And so I was collating some of that information. I came across this one, and I died. I was sifting through them, and I came across this one, and I just could not stop crying. Because the majority of the people that were at this event were our kaumātua, were the older generation. And I started to think, how long have they been thinking this way? Why do they think this? Why do they think that it sucks to be Māori? How long? You know, what impact has that had on their life? And it just, I just couldn't get over that. And in that moment I said, my job is to serve my people and to serve my community. And with that, I started to learn more about Māori business, then I learned more about Indigenous entrepreneurship and just about Indigenous people in general. And I feel, my personal belief is Indigenous people have the solutions to the issues in the world, but it just the voices need to be amplified. Because, you know, when we think about climate change, the generations to come, if we think about our whānau over the ditch in Australia, they're the oldest Indigenous group. They've probably dealt with climate change a couple of times. So we can get some of that advice from them to support the whole world. So I said, boom, I'm going to serve my people. I had no job. I was like kind of wandering around, what does that look like? But I love to connect with people. So one of my friends, well, i.e. I stalked her, her name's Teresa Tepania Ashton. She was the former CEO of Ngapuhi, our biggest iwi. And I was like, that sounds so flash, can we be friends? And so I kind of didn't stalk her, but I just admired her from afar. And we caught up and had some coffee, and she was amazing and so inspiring. And I caught up with her a couple of times, actually. And then I decided that for my year, I assigned themes to the year, because every time I try and do New Year's resolutions, I don't do any ticks. So I thought I'd assign a theme. So my theme for that year, which was 2015, was self-discovery. So I needed to learn more about my culture. And I did it. Have you guys heard of Life Hack? Flourishing Fellowship? Oh, I did this Flourishing Fellowship. It was like a complete dismantling of self, but a collective rebuilding. So you're there with 20 other people that are trying to make positive change for youth in New Zealand, for their well-being. And I went there and I just dropped my life story. And it's something I'd never done before. I was so vulnerable. But that was so imperative to my growth, because I was rebuilt and I have this new family who know me so deeply. And that gave me a lot of strength in that being vulnerable. So I wandered overseas. I scabbed somehow to go to this awesome conference with Indigenous people looking at entrepreneurship. And I got this call from Teresa from Māori Women's Development Inc. And she was like, do you want to work for us? And I was like, yes. She's like, oh, it's just an admin role. And I was like, I don't care, I want to work. She's like, oh, I've sent you the contract, just have it. No, I'm saying yes, give me the job. Can I start when I come back? So I did, that was awesome. And that's brought some more amazing opportunities with Te Urupake, which I'll talk about. So with Life Hack, I met up with this awesome chick, her name's Jamie Emery, and she had this vision for the North. She's been really upset about our youth suicide rates up in the north, that she wanted to make a change. And within her area, she saw our young Māori woman was a place that we could really, really support. So she designed Camp Kaitiaki, and the aim of that is to get young girls from the whānau to reconnect with what it means to be guardians of themselves, their whānau, their peers, the environment, and their culture. And so what that looks like is we did a prototype of 10 girls between 11 to 16, and we ran 5 camps centred around the 5 areas towards well-being. And at each of the camps, it's all saturated in te ao Māori, but we also inject a little bit of entrepreneurship, and we inject a little bit of te ao Pākehā, it's a collision, you know, this is the world that we're in. We need to kind of take all ingredients from all these different areas and merge it together to make this beautiful cake or whatever it may turn into. So these are some images of our girls, and we're currently working on the next Camp Kaitiaki and what that might look like, but we've had amazing results. Some of our girls would only go to school 2 times a week because they'd have to look after younger family members. Then they're going to school four days a week. You know, it's just, it's those things that's, it's so big, it's so huge for our girls, and just being able to stand up and say their pepeha at the end of it when at the beginning they couldn't. So that's so transformational. In my work at Māori Women's Development Inc., I do admin and all of our social media stuff, but I also support our youth programs. So we run 2 youth entrepreneur programs in low decile schools for, so we've got the year 11s to 13, so you've got around that 15 to 17, 18 year old age range, and we run these entrepreneur programs. So what it looks like is we go into the schools, we're like, you can be an entrepreneur, you can make magic happen. Okay, you got an idea, business idea, you can have a business. Let's make it happen in 3 days. So we go through that process of getting them to design a business plan, and on the last day, they make whatever the thing is and present it to leaders from their community. And that's just been amazing, because they're actually doing stuff, right? I did do one like it in school, but majority of the time you're sitting there and being lectured to. So it's awesome to give that, getting them to unleash their inner entrepreneur, and it is pure magic when that happens. We've got a second tier program, which is targeted for our Māori students, which is a week-long entrepreneur program. It looks at entrepreneurship. So how can you enact change within an organisation? So our partnering organisation this year was Air New Zealand. And so our students were like, that's cool as, it's Air New Zealand. And they came out with some support for Air New Zealand to encourage more young Māori into their business. And that was just, again, it's just so transformational. And all the work that I do, especially with young people, it's because I am driven by my younger self and the things that I wish that I had when I was growing up, that little girl in GI. So if I can be that person that my younger self would have needed, then I'll probably give myself a high five, right? It's pretty awesome. So in all the mahi that I do, yeah, I need to serve young people, but have them there part of the co-design process, because I can't go to them and say, you're young, this is what you need. It's about, hey, what do you need and how can I help? That's the way that we angle it. So it's just, it's amazingly fulfilling work. The key thing with our young people as well, actually, is, and with all of our people, going back to that it sucks to be Māori, the thing that I just want to have that conversation and just let our people know, let everyone know that they have the blood of chiefs flowing through their veins. And don't forget that, because you are royalty and standing in yourself, and you're a guardian of yourself, so you have that mana and that strength. So stand in everything that you do and act in every way that you act with that strength and that power and that support for others. So that's when I'm able to do that and see the light go on in some of our students' eyes, it's just, you know, those internal fireworks, it like actually happens. It's pretty magical. For me personally, in terms of courage going forward, my theme for this year is called Footprints. And this is actually from up in Te Nota, from Tai Tokero. There's this, you got to go to, it's called Te Paki Sand Dunes. It's like huge, like it's the closest thing we have to the full-on desert. It's beautiful. But these are some footprints of our Camp Kaitiaki girls. And my theme for this year, Footprints, is broken into 3 parts. So the first one is wanting to walk in the footprints of my tupuna, of my ancestors. So I'm still on that journey to reconnect with my culture. And I need to continue to learn my reo. Like, I had my te reo class this morning, but it still was slow because I was like, take me back to kōhanga. Like, I want to know from scratch. But it's so amazing when I've been learning the culture, because all the values that you spoke to as well are encapsulated in each of our words. And it's just so powerful as well when you're speaking. You speak with such conviction. So learning about the reo, my language, so I can speak as my ancestors spoke and give ode to them. The second part is karanga. So we've got our karanga as the first core. The women have that honour to open up spaces. So I'm learning about karanga, which is like so scary as well, because I don't know, it's this interesting thing where I get so nervous to speak te reo, especially in front of like fluent te reo speakers or Māori, because I feel like if I get it wrong, I'm going to do a big dishonour to my whole tupuna and all my ancestors and everyone. And that's been the biggest challenge actually with karanga, because you stand up there and you're getting all this power and drawing it in, and then you're opening up a space in a whole other realm, and you're like, for me, I second guess myself and I say, I've got all my ancestors and all my support around me, am I going to do them a do them the honour by doing this justice, and sometimes my inner critic comes in. So that's been a challenge with that one, but it's also been an awakening. So footprints are my tūpuna, that's where those two come under. The second tier, I guess, is footprints on other lands. So I love connecting with our other Indigenous people and seeing how they're doing things. So how can I, again, go overseas and connect and walk on other lands and learn about how they do things and offer some support in any way, offer service to them? So that's really big for me. And the last one is the footprint, the depth of the footprints that I leave on the earth. So that again connects to all of it connects with kaitiakitanga. But this one is about trying to be as zero waste as I can be. When I say that I care about the environment, I care about the environment. If I'm frustrated about blooming plastic, I don't want to use any plastic. How can I make small incremental changes to protect papa and to look after our earth? So that's a really big focus for me as well around kaitiakitanga and living my values. And I guess for you all, the wero that I put out to you is just identifying those values, because I always used to be like, oh, my values is this, this, this. But until I gave oxygen to those words and thought about what is the small change that I can make to live my values every day, it was life, it was magic, it was awesome. So I'd invite you to just think about what your values are and how can you enact and live your values every day, even if it's just the smallest thing. So yeah, nō reira. Tēnā koutou katoa. Kia
Well, I think we've seen some magic woven today. Have we got time for some questions? Has anyone got questions?
In the future with you two, so thank you so much.
I also have thoroughly enjoyed. Thank you so much for coming. I worry, insofar as an old person, Pākehā, can worry, about another sort of racism that pervades New Zealand, and I've thought of it as the shadow of Don Brash. For a Pākehā, it is for one who comes from Taranaki, who has that mountain and a river, which of course I don't know the name of. It is so wonderful to know what your, to hear you affirm your own culture, which has so much to teach Pākehā. And I despair of this, what I think of as a brash attitude of becoming equal and sharing, which means destroying. And thank you so much for the confidence with which you speak, and which I feel Pākehā have still got to acknowledge. Thank you.
I just want to echo what Francis has been saying. Is that better? I just want to echo what Francis has been saying and to say thank you very much. And I only wish we had a full house to have heard you. But nevertheless, I small house. Sorry, but I'm not too sure what I really meant to say when I started that sentence. But anyway, thank you very much. It's been a privilege to be here and to hear you people.
Yes, thank you. I'm quite amazed at how well you both speak, and I'm pleased that... and impressed with the number of things you've learned already in your lives. Been a joy to listen to you both. Thank you.
I'm impressed by the confidence shown by these people. And it seems to me, because I've been around a lot of years now, that in recent decades, Maori have come from, as it were, behind, and they're now coming up towards the front of the pack. What is it that brought about this resurgence of confidence that you have, and how can we be sure that it will continue?
My thing is, growing up with a strong family I've always been told that when children are born, it changes the whole perspective of a family and how they're going to be brought up. So when the conscious decision was made that we would be children who would go through a total immersion education system, at the beginning there was resistance because of like what Christina touched on, our grandparents' parents were the generation who were told there's no value in being Māori or knowing who you are and things like that. So when it got down to us, there was like, well, do we want our children to go through the same thing that we did? And they made the conscious decision to say, no, we want them to know. And from that and just persevering through that time has just got us to where we are here now. So my thing is... I'm always proud to be Māori, and that's my upbringing, and that I'm very grateful for that. I had a completely different experience to Christina because I was brought up in a very Māori-dominated area who were in the middle of this shift that you are talking about. They were at the beginning of it. So when you talk to some of my uncles who are now professors and doctors and aunties, they were a part of that, and it was their commitment to reviving Te Ao Māori in our area, which kind of consolidated that. So I would say that us kids were the guinea pigs for this theory, and it's continuing now because they've seen the product of their hard work. So as a product of that, that's my responsibility to ensure that it continues, and that's the commitment I'm willing to make. And like my cousins and we were the guinea pigs literally in this whole, in the education system, the total immersion, everything. And they've seen the success that it has brought our iwi and Māori. So we think that's formulas can always be adapted because the times are changing. So I think if we keep working on what worked for us and what will work for the next generation, that's my responsibility. I feel responsible for that. And that's the commitment I'm willing to make to ensure that the next generation grow up knowing that they are Māori and there's nothing wrong with being Māori. Because I also went to a school, and when I went to mainstream, the biggest thing I could never understand is how low my peers, who were also Māori, thought about themselves, and they never thought that they could achieve. And that's something I struggled with because I was always told you can achieve anything you put your mind to. And so it's pushing that to all Māori students. So it's in a main. Sometimes when you're put in a mainstream system, it doesn't necessarily work. And that's what we need to work on, is finding ways which works for everyone, because there's not one size fits all. It doesn't work. So it's about making those conscious changes and ensuring that everyone has, that you give yourself the benefit of the doubt always, that you can succeed. And that's my upbringing. So, yeah. I hope that answered your question.
I'll just jump onto the going forward, looking back to going forward and how can we keep that going. So when we reflect beyond, there's been resistance throughout, especially during colonisation, but the impacts of colonisation have been so, so horrendous that it has silenced a generation for a long time. But the upheaval is happening now. It's happening with the guinea pigs, but it's happening with our younger generation, with the Gen Y and Gen Z, where we stand strong in our identity and that desire to know, ko waio, who am I? So that keeps the snowball effect going. In terms of other things that are happening generally in New Zealand, I'll talk on the business side. The benefits of the economy, the first economy was the Māori economy, and then we have this New Zealand economy, and now there's more of an emergence about the Māori economy and Māori business. The magical thing about Māori business is that we connect with the way other businesses around the world engage in business. If we compare the different cultures, Māori is a very collective, reinvesting way of engaging in business, whereas a Western way of engaging in business is much different. It's profit-driven and individualised. So we connect really easily with our friends over in China and India because they also have that collective mindset. So it's really beneficial when you lend some of that way of engaging in business to your own business, and we see that in movements now where people are looking at social enterprise and they're looking at, you know, CSR and all these things that they can incorporate into their business to help them strengthen their ties internationally. That has an impact on their business, impacts New Zealand generally. That's on that business side. Just as an economy, just as a Aotearoa, our youngest population within Māoridom, it's 23 years old is the average age. So when we look at the next 10, 20 years, the population is going to be mainly Māori, Samoan and Chinese. That's what it's going to look like. And when we think about Aotearoa, people think about the haka, they think about Māori, they think New Zealand, they think environment, they think clean, la la la, you know. But what's the one thing that you can only get in Aotearoa is Māori. And it's been used for tourism all the way. But how proud can you be when you go and stand on other soils, on other lands, and you can say kia ora, or you can say kei te pea koe, or nohea koe. When you can say that and be like, I come from New Zealand. We have Māori there, I'm saying kia ora. I'm proud too. We're all from Aotearoa. Stand in it, learn the reo. You know, stand on other lands and represent, because we are all here from Aotearoa. And it's beautiful when you're able to take that culture and fully and authentically represent Aotearoa and what our international whānau perceives New Zealand to be. So I think it will definitely continue the momentum. We're going to go into fifth gear. It's going to be awesome. Very excited for our future, our collective future. You know, the collective mindset doesn't seep only into te ao Māori, into the Māori world. It's for everyone. Yeah, kia ora.
Just going to hand over to Geraldine to do a thank you.
Kia ora. Kia ora especially to you two. I'm so glad I came today. I'm delighted to hear your comments too, that you've enjoyed it so much as I have. And I'm glad that you've included me in your team. I want to come in your team. It's wonderful. Thank you. I'm really proud to be a New Zealander, particularly after hearing you two speak. I'm sure that I know that you've all been encouraged to follow your dream no matter what the difficulties. It has been good too, especially in this election year, to be reminded how important education, the arts, family, culture are in the mix of things so that our dreams can become a reality. The late John F. Kennedy said, efforts and courage are not enough without purpose and direction. And you too are the living proof of these words today. With people such as yourselves, I truly feel hope for the future. So thank you once again. All our best wishes for the future and in the work you do. I hope that I have the good fortune that our paths will cross again. So thank you. Tēnā rawa atu koe. have a bookstall at the back. We have a donation plate too to help us with our expenses. And if you'd like to become a member of the trust, leave your name too, and we'd love to have you be part of that. Thank you.